Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Archeries Podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. The Man Behind the Cane by Paul Quigley is a historical biography and political history centered on Preston Brooks, the South Carolina congressman who assaulted Massachusetts Senator Charles Sumner in the United States Senate chamber in 1856. Rather than treating the caning as an isolated episode of antebellum brutality, Quigley uses Brooks' life to examine the social codes, political pressures, and personal insecurities that made violence seem legitimate to many white Southerners defending slavery. The book situates Brooks within a slaveholding culture of honor, masculinity, family loyalty, and public reputation, while also tracing how sectional conflict over slavery turned words into perceived acts of aggression. Its purpose is both biographical and interpretive to explain how one man came to commit a notorious act of political violence and why that act resonated so powerfully across the United States. The result is a focused study of how personal grievance and national crisis converged on the road to the Civil War. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, Preston Brooks as more than a symbol of sectional violence. Quigley gives sustained attention to Preston Brooks as a person rather than leaving him as a one-dimensional emblem of Southern aggression. The caning of Charles Sumner is the event that defines Brooks in public memory, but the book asks how he reached the point where such an assault could appear necessary, honorable, or even redemptive. This biographical approach matters because Brooks has often been remembered mainly through the reactions he provoked Northern outrage, Southern celebration, and later historical condemnation. Quigley instead reconstructs the pressures that shaped his sense of self, including family standing, regional identity, and the expectations placed on elite white Southern men. The result is not an apology for Brooks, but a fuller explanation of how political violence can emerge from a combination of personal insecurity and cultural permission. By restoring context around Brooks' motivations, the book shows that the caning was not simply a sudden loss of control. It was an action made thinkable by social habits that treated public reputation as fragile and violence as a means of repair. Secondly, the Southern Honor Code as a mechanism for escalating conflict. A central theme of the book is the Southern Code of Honor, especially its influence on how white male elites responded to insult. In the world, Quigley describes, reputation was not merely private self-esteem. It was a public asset tied to manhood, family authority, political credibility, and the defense of slavery. Words such as cowardice, dishonor, or corruption could therefore carry consequences far beyond ordinary disagreement. Brooks interpreted Sumner's attack on pro-slavery senators, including a relative of Brooks, as a violation that required visible response. This code helps explain why violence could appear not as a breakdown of politics, but as a recognized political and social language. Quigley connects Brooks' behavior to a broader culture in which dueling, threats, and physical intimidation were treated as ways to settle disputes over status. The value of this analysis is that it identifies a mechanism political disagreement became dangerous when embedded in a social order that made restraint look like weakness and retaliation look like duty. Thirdly, how political speech became entangled with physical retaliation. The Man Behind the Cane places unusual emphasis on the relationship between words and violence in antebellum politics. Sumner's speech against slavery and its defenders was harsh, personal, and morally charged, but the deeper issue was how audiences understood the boundary between verbal attack and physical provocation. Quigley uses the caning to explore a political culture in which speech was not always treated as protected argument. For men operating within honor norms, public language could be interpreted as an injury-demanding answer. This made political debate especially volatile in a nation already divided over slavery, because arguments about policy also became arguments about character, civilization, and moral legitimacy. The book does not suggest that harsh speech caused violence in any simple way. Instead, it examines how political communities decide whether words should be answered by persuasion, institutional discipline, social shaming, or force. That distinction gives the book contemporary relevance while keeping the historical focus precise. The crisis lay not only in what Americans said, but in what they believed speech authorized them to do. Fourthly, the caning as a national event that widened the North-South divide. Quigley treats the caning of Charles Sumner as a catalytic event in the political crisis of the 1850s. Brooks' attack did not by itself cause the Civil War, but it intensified existing sectional antagonisms by offering each side a stark image of the other. In much of the North, the assault became evidence that the slave power was hostile not only to abolitionism, but to free speech and Republican government. In parts of the South, Brooks was praised as a defender of honor and slaveholding rights, and the celebration of his violence confirmed Northern fears about the moral and political consequences of slavery. The event therefore mattered as both action and symbol. It helped transform congressional conflict into a national drama. mobilizing outrage and sharpening political identities at a time when the Republican Party was emerging as a major anti-slavery force. Quigley shows that the power of the caning came from its visibility. A violent encounter in the Capitol made abstract debates over slavery, honor, and union impossible to separate. Lastly, contemporary relevance without reducing history to analogy. One distinctive feature of the book is its attention to the modern implications of political violence, while remaining grounded in the 19th century. Quigley draws attention to the danger of political cultures in which aggrieved individuals come to view spectacular violence as a meaningful public act. The comparison to the present is not based on claiming that modern politics simply repeats the 1850s. Instead, the book identifies recurring patterns of alienation, grievance, rhetoric that sanctifies retaliation, and public responses that either condemn violence or reward it with fame and approval. This perspective broadens the significance of Brooks beyond Civil War historiography. It asks readers to think about how communities normalize or resist violent conduct, especially when perpetrators claim to defend identity, honor, or a threatened way of life. The contemporary dimension is strongest because it grows from the historical argument rather than being attached as a moral afterthought. The book suggests that political violence depends not only on individual rage, but also on audiences willing to excuse, celebrate, or mythologize it. In conclusion, B.S. The Man Behind the Cane is especially valuable for readers interested in the Civil War era, the politics of slavery, congressional history, Southern culture, and the history of political violence. It should appeal to scholars and students, but also to general readers who want a focused explanation of why the Sumner caning became such a powerful national symbol. The practical and intellectual benefit of the book lies in its attention to causation at multiple levels. It does not reduce violence to personality, ideology, or circumstance alone. Instead, it shows how private insecurity, public honor, pro-slavery politics, and sectional polarization combine to make violence both thinkable and politically meaningful, compared with broader surveys of the antebellum crisis. The book stands out by using one life and one notorious act to illuminate the wider collapse of civic norms before the Civil War. Compared with accounts that treat Brooks mainly as a villain in the Sumner episode, Quigley offers a more analytical portrait of the world that produced him. Its importance lies in that balance. It neither excuses the assault nor treats it as inexplicable. By tracing the path from insult to retaliation to national consequence, the book clarifies how political communities can move from argument to bloodshed. If you would like to support Paul Quigley, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.